Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the latest Royal Roundup from Talk TV. So pop the kettle on. This is The Royal Tea. I'm Sarah Hewson. On today's show, we'll be discussing the King's 75th birthday celebrations, including a special video message from Montecito. Was Harry kept in the dark about his grandmother's health in her final hours? And we'll be diving into the last season of The Crown. Joining me to discuss all that and much more are royal commentator and Talk TV regular Ophir Hagen and Hello Magazine's royal editor Emily Nash. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Now, the King has celebrated his 75th birthday by helping to launch a new food charity initiative. Joined by the Queen, the King visited a food distribution hub in Oxfordshire to kickstart his Coronation Food Project, which aims to support charities feeding the nation with unwanted food. Emily, what is this project all about? This is a legacy project to mark the King's birthday.
Yeah, that's right. I think the King's really mindful that he's had a lot of big public celebrations already this year. And he wanted something to mark his sort of joint milestone, the coronation and his birthday, that's actually going to have an impact going forward. And it's a really simple but brilliant idea. It's basically supercharging these amazing food waste projects that are going on around the country to bridge the gap between wasted food or food that's destined for landfill and people who really need it. So, you know, there's sort of 8,500 charities and organisations who rely on food being donated from supermarkets. But what was missing was the sort of logistics and basic white goods, if you like, to try and to marry the two up. And
I think fridges, freezers, lorries to
exactly
move it around.
That. Yeah, so it's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, Emily describes it there. It's not rocket science.
No,
it's not. It's common sense. Mm-hmm. There is food waste, some 10 million tonnes of food going to waste every year, and there's need. And bring the two together, and the aim is to make a massive difference, Sophia.
And actually, when we put it so simply, we think, why did nobody think of this before? And that's what the royal family, the King, do best. Conveners of people bringing together, people bringing together ideas. And actually, this also tackles the problem of food waste, which is an environmental issue that Charles has been really passionate about from day dot. And of course, he's talked about the cost of living crisis. You know, he referenced it in his King's speech in Christmas last year, you know, what people are going through at the moment with the cost of living crisis. And so trying to do something about these two issues, it's obvious, it's really simple, and it's also brilliant. So now you can have kitchens that can get frozen food left over from restaurants that can be made into soups, pies, other things put in freezers. They can go to soup kitchens. They can be given out at food banks. It's a really, really simple idea. And getting the logistics in place to do that is crucial. And it's great, actually, that the King used such a milestone birthday, you know, 75, to launch such an incredible and hopefully impactful project.
And the aim, Emily, was that there have been a lot of public celebrations and big royal events of late, not that long since the Platinum Jubilee, although it feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? Of course, we had the death of the Queen and then the coronation. To make this more about purpose rather than parties, although there was at dinner for the King at Clarence House?
There was a lovely private party. I think we all wanted to know what was going on behind closed doors there. We saw a few photos of glamorously dressed William and Kate coming out quite late at night. But really, you know, I was told that the King wanted more than anything for this to be about other people. So he used his big day really to shine a light on things that really matter to him. I mean, if you think about the engagement they did in Didcot, it was food waste, it was food need, it was homelessness. You know, he had a lovely moment of buying a copy of The Big Issue from a vendor there.
Which ties in with Prince William's
Absolutely.
Interests.
So it's really about them looking outwards. And then later in the day, as if he hadn't already done enough on his special day, he hosted 400 midwives and nurses. Interestingly, all from the NHS, but largely also from other countries. And I think he's really using his position to very gently raise awareness of things. You know, he has to be careful. You know, people might accuse him of getting close to politics, especially, you know, there's been discussion around homelessness and politics recently, of course. But I genuinely think that this is with the intention of helping people and bringing people together and recognising people. And I think, you know, listening to some of those nurses the other day, the recognition meant so much to them. These are people who work so hard for us all, and for them to be the spotlight of his birthday was a really big deal.
Yeah, and actually, the headlines around the NHS aren't always positive, and morale within the NHS can be pretty low at times, particularly at the moment. And to have this celebration, because it's also celebrating 75 years of the NHS, a boost.
Yeah, absolutely. And also 75 years since the arrival of the Empire Windrush. And a lot of the people that were at the NHS celebration are from that generation, are from the Commonwealth. You know, it literally have propped up the NHS for the 75 years that it's been in existence. It is great, actually, that the King took his birthday as an opportunity to honour these incredible nurses and midwives within the NHS. And also yesterday, the Queen had an event for women in the Commonwealth, again, recognising people from that Windrush generation and beyond who are doing incredible work within the Commonwealth.
Now, we saw a family album posted on the Royal Family's X Twitter, I can't get used to it, account, didn't we? We also saw some photos posted by the Prince and Princess of Wales to mark the King's birthday. But what has got more attention is a phone call from California, Emily, from Prince Harry. Are we seeing a thawing of relations?
Look, I think everyone's very happy to hear it. You know, who wouldn't want to have contact with their parent on a milestone birthday like that? And I'm sure that the King will have been delighted to hear from him. It's interesting, isn't it? Because if you go back to Spare, which, believe it or not, was at the beginning of this same year we're in now, which feels like much longer. I felt that Charles came across quite sympathetically, despite, you know, the various slingbats that came from that book. There was clearly a lot of affection still there from Harry towards his father. And I think that letting it be known that this communication's happening is a sign, you know, that the ties are still there. And needless to say, there's going to be a lot of work behind the scenes needed to be done, but I think it's a good sign.
And as well as a conversation with Harry, it was reported that the King also spoke to Meghan and a video message, Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet singing happy birthday to him.
Yeah, and that's something that we're being told that Meghan organised. She had a chat with Charles about it, and this video message was sent. And what grandparent doesn't want a really cute video of the kids singing happy birthday? What parent hasn't had to corral their children into doing such? It's always a lot of work.
Take three.
Exactly. You can do it, guys. So I think that's lovely, you know, a really lovely present. And again, an indication of a thawing of relations. Like, we shouldn't expect to see the band back together and the three of them walking arm in arm through the gates of, you know, Balmoral anytime soon. But the fact that on this occasion, on Charles's 75th birthday, that there was a conversation, that there was, you know, a video message sent, that there was communications.
For the first time in months.
In months, in, you know, 11 months or something. Like you said, Spare was only out at the beginning of this year. It feels like years and years ago. But the fact that we are here on this occasion, I think is great. But like I said, I don't think we can expect to see, you know, a great gathering anytime soon.
But you just never know, do you? Because, you know, the news of this phone call and of the video being sent kind of came out of the blue. Christmas is coming. You just don't know, do you?
Just a day after news of this phone call, though, fresh claims have emerged from Omid Scobie's new book, Endgame. And this details a fear, the final day of Queen Elizabeth's life, and suggests that Prince Harry was completely on his own. Just talk us through what is claimed in the book.
Absolutely. So, of course, like you said, this is Omid Scobie's book, Endgame, which is out in the next couple of weeks. And in this particular extract, he talks about that final day when the Queen was very ill and then passed away, how Prince Harry was trying to get in touch with his brother, Prince William, was sending him messages to find out how people were travelling up to Scotland. He heard that William had got a jet with his uncles, there was a seat on it, tried to get in touch with them to get on that, to see what he was doing. He was completely on his own, had to organise his own plane to go up to Scotland. There was delays with that. He spoke to Charles about Meghan coming. It was made clear, he said, that Meghan was not welcome, that Kate was staying behind to pick up the kids from school. And so he was delayed at getting on the plane. And then, of course, the news actually came out when he was in the air. You've got no communications, of course, when you're, you know, how many thousands of feet in the air. And when he landed, he got a message from Meghan to call urgently and then saw the BBC news flash, of course, saying that the Queen had died. And it comes across, actually, in that extract that Prince Harry was literally completely on his own, but also that he was being ignored by his brother at a really, really, really terrible time in both of their lives. And actually, that continued. You know, when he got to Balmoral, he was greeted warmly by Princess Anne. He managed to have some time with the Queen. He was still texting William. William was still not replying. And the next day, he booked his own BA flight to go to come back to London after texting William, sending a message about, you know, the passing of the Queen. Still got no replies. And I think what we can really take from that extract is the relationship between Prince Harry and Prince William was completely at an all-time low, and that continues to be where it is now.
Emily, we know that Omid Scobie has been very close to the Sussex camp, and we know that in his previous book, Finding Freedom, Meghan eventually had to admit that she had cooperated in that book. I mean, the account that we've seen in this excerpt that was released on the US site People is very intimate in terms of what it tells us about Harry's feelings and exactly what occurred on that final day, and even saying goodbye in the final moment, saying goodbye to his grandmother who had died some hours before. How will this be received by the palace?
Look, I think there may be some off-the-record reaction to it. I think what's really important to remember is we're only hearing one side of the story here. And you know, following tradition for many, many years, the royal family are very unlikely to ever come out and counter this, because otherwise it's going to end up in a he said, she said, tit
for tat. And once you start...
argument. And one thing I would say as well is that this isn't completely new material. A lot of this was written about by Harry himself. So there is that sort of... The material's out there. The palace didn't react at the time. You know, overtly, nobody in the royal family has spoken about this. And I think we just need to bear that in mind. We're hearing accounts from people very close to Harry and Meghan about what went down that day. I think it's fair to say, you know, when there's a death in the family, people aren't always looking outwards and thinking about details. Like, most of us don't have to organise a private jet, to be fair, when this happens. But there's another side to this story.
And we're not going to hear that other side.
I very much doubt we're going to hear it.
Although there have been reports that royal courtiers are furious at this story and furious at the, you know, the implication that Prince William ignored Prince Harry on this occasion. And that's probably all we're going to get, isn't it?
And you have to just go back to that time last year when just a few days later, actually, both couples were together in Windsor and went on a walkabout. So there clearly was some communication. Over that period, at least.
And it's interesting because we talk about perhaps a thawing of relations between Harry and his father now with that phone call. I remember the moment those pictures came out of William and Kate
and Harry and Meghan walking down the Long Walk in Windsor. And there was a real sense of hope, perhaps this huge moment in the life of the royal family could be a moment and a catalyst for rapprochement between these two couples. And it just hasn't come, has it?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think that was very much about doing it for the late Queen.
Mm-hmm. Doing the right thing.
Absolutely.
Now, the Prince of Wales is planning to take his annual Earthshot Prize Awards to China in an attempt to engage with the country and fast-forward change to its environmental policies. He's going to visit the world's biggest polluter, despite severely restrained relations between China and the West. This decision, a marked contrast to the approach, has been taken by his father today, to Fear.
And, you know, King Charles has never visited China, never wanted to because of the human rights record in the past, does not want to engage. Prince William has visited before in 2015. But I think if you are going to go down the route of trying to do something impactful and scale up when it comes to climate change, you have to engage people like China, India, America, Australia, all these other countries, because you have China, which is like the world's biggest polluter of CO2. You have Australia, which is hugely impactful with their huge emissions of CO2 as well. And then you have countries on the continent of Africa who are feeling the effects of climate change already. You have to engage everybody in the conversation. So I think, yes, you know, it probably is a good idea to engage China in this. But I think also, we have to, you know, when it comes to climate change, we have to realise that we are all in different stages. All different countries and all different continents are in different stages of that journey. So he has to be careful how he does it. Of course, like we always say, remaining apolitical when he does it. But the Earthshot Prize is all about being impactful. It's all about taking really good ideas, research and development into these different five different sustainable development goals and taking them to scale. And that's what's really important.
Meanwhile, King Charles is to hold talks with Arab leaders this month to discuss a roadmap for peace in Gaza. He's hoping that his close working and personal ties to Arab royals might boost diplomatic initiatives. And he's holding bilateral discussions. Afia talked there about the delicate line that royal family members need to tread on issues as significant as this. What kind of role can the king play, Emily?
Well, it's about convening people. You know, quite simply, he's a sort of neutral figurehead who has relationships with all of these people. You know, over many decades, he's travelled across the whole of the Middle East. He knows these leaders personally. He knows them really well. And he is able to have conversations that politicians probably can't have at this point. Now, again, it's incredibly difficult, but using this soft diplomacy is so vital. You know, it's so important to our government. That's why the royals are sent on these trips, at the request of the British government. And going back, actually, I was on that trip to China with Prince William. Seeing him with President Xi is quite a huge deal. Yeah. And it's not a light undertaking. And I think it's something that the senior royals are getting to grips with really well, particularly William now in his role. He's really coming through as a sort of global statesman. We've seen that with Earthshot. Charles has been doing this for half a century, so he has the ear of the people who matter, and I think he can really influence people, even in an apolitical way.
Meanwhile, talking about influence, the Princess of Wales has called for action at every level to help rebalance and restore society's social and emotional skills, as her Early Childhood Foundation released new research on the issue. In a keynote speech at a symposium convened by Kate to discuss the findings, the future Queen said the skills are the human wiring we need. Emily, you were at this national symposium for Kate's Shaping Us campaign, and some very high-profile support.
Absolutely, yeah. She had global experts in the room. She had professors from Harvard. She had former Prime Minister Tony Blair. She had Lord Hague. Some real heavyweights in this area. And she did really well. You know, she's a nervous public speaker. She gave her longest speech to date. And I feel like her message is really starting to permeate now. What she's essentially saying is that we need to act now to prevent all these social problems down the line. It's something she's learned through her many years of, you know, visiting people struggling with addiction, with homelessness, family breakdown, all of these things. Interestingly, Tony Blair was saying that no one's had so much of a long-term view of things. And that's something that she's able to bring to the table. You know, she's not beholden to a political electoral cycle. She can see things on a much longer term scale than most politicians can. And I think what she'd like to influence is some kind of consensus. There is cross-party support for what she's doing. So that nationally we have some kind of framework for this that doesn't just last until the next election.
Mm. And Emily mentioned there, you know, some of the causes that Kate has become involved in, mental health, addiction. Mm-hmm. She famously took the visit to a prison earlier this year, which she referenced talking to prisoners. And in every conversation that she's had, dates back to childhood. Mm-hmm. And the grounding of childhood and how that influences our outcomes later in life. I mean, this is described as her life's work, isn't it, Afia? And we're seeing her very much more confident.
Absolutely.
In what she's trying to do.
Yeah, I think when Shaping Us was announced, people were like, well, you know, what is it? What is it going to consist of? How is it going to make a difference? And now we are kind of seeing that in action, you know, as she's talking about the skills that people need to develop when they are tiny to take them through to adulthood. You know, she was talking about her youngest Louis using a feelings wheel at school. He's been part of the research for the Shaping Us project, and, you know, they use it to describe how they're feeling today with different colours and helping children to communicate with peers, with adults, with teachers. And I think that's brilliant. But I think also is that this project, if it's her life's work, needs to really tackle the nuts and bolts of what parents say is stopping them from parenting in the best way for their children. And again, this is where the cost of living crisis will come up. How am I feeding my children? What am I feeding them with? The spiraling costs of childcare. You know, you've got some families paying £2,000 or more a month for childcare. That's more than their rent or mortgage. These are issues that also need to be tackled. It's brilliant that we're tackling how children are feeling, them being able to talk about that at school, with their peers and with their friends, like I said. But we also need to be able to help parents parent better. That has got to be an integral part of Shaping Us as well.
Now, The Crown. Sixth and final season has been released this week. And as always, it has been making headlines with its dramatic plots and its fictionalised storylines at times. We have all been watching, binge-watching the first four episodes that were released at 8 o'clock this morning, Thursday. We are recording this. Let's get your verdicts so far. Afia, what do you make of it?
There's so much I want to say. First of all, I will have to say Elizabeth Debicki is incredible as Princess Diana. I mean, she just she really is so believable. The wardrobe department of The Crown absolutely nailed all of the looks in the outfits, especially Princess Diana's, I mean her swimsuits that she wore when she was in Saint-Tropez, the outfit that we saw her in, the blazer and the trousers that we saw her wear on the last night, you know, the night that she died in the tunnel in Paris. I mean, honestly, along with Elizabeth Debicki's acting, it's just incredible. I will say that always remind yourself when you're watching it that it's a drama. We know there is lots of real life events that are being depicted. And I find myself watching it going, you're not going to get away with that. And how did you manage to get that in there? But I fear it's a drama. It's a drama. It's not real life. It's real life events within a drama. Just remind yourself of that all the time and you won't get angry.
The lines are really blurred though.
Very.
Emily, because when we talk about the way in which the costume department have created the exact replicas of Diana's outfits.
I mean, they've mocked up a copy of Hello Magazine. Diana appears to be the attention to detail is extraordinary.
And that is why you can forget sometimes that this isn't
absolutely
an accurate historical account. And there are some real, there is some real artistic license here,
there is
particularly
some real,
in some of the conversations that
absolutely.
Take place.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the imagined conversations I found myself slightly shouting at the screen about. But, you know, we're never going to know what really happened in any of those
moments. I mean, one of those imagined conversations is Diana's final telephone call with William and Harry, who were at Balmoral.
Yeah.
And she called them from Paris. And we know from their account, they talked about having a rushed conversation.
And Harry regrets not having spoken to her for longer on that final call. You know, he's written about it in his autobiography. So I think that's almost helpful in a way to have that knowledge that we have and go, OK, this isn't really what happened. All that being said, I found myself in tears.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to move me in the way that it did. And I think that we all remember those events. And actually what it did as well was bring back quite a few facets of the whole period that I'd forgotten about.
The music that they used in
the music,
as
the
well.
90s music.
Yeah, fantastic.
But also the coverage at the time of this change that Diana was going through, because I do remember reports, you know, of her being called a loose cannon, which seems incredibly cruel to think about now. But she was obviously going through this huge change. She was so much in everyone's consciousness. And that's why, you know, August 31st, 1997 was just a huge shock to people.
And I think watching it as well, even though we know what happens and probably because we know what happens, you watch it with a real feeling of trepidation.
You do, because we know the outcome.
Absolutely.
And when you see that, her saying goodbye to William and Harry for the last time as they're driven off by their father
and you know
to go to Balmoral. You know that's the last time.
You know it's the last time. And also the scenes, I mean, this is not a spoiler alert because we know this happens. You know, the scenes where her and Dodie are in the car, you know, being chased by paparazzi. You do feel really...
You feel the stress.
Yeah, you do. You feel it come across on the screen and you think, God, that must have been so scary for
now
them.
Interestingly, because much had been talked about when this was being filmed, how they were going to deal with the crash and the actual death of Diana, and we were assured that they wouldn't be showing the moment of the crash but would deal with it. Now the very opening seconds of the first episode are the crash, but we don't see it, do we? We just hear the sound of the car crashing in the Alma Tunnel.
That's right. I think it's a very clever plot device, which we probably shouldn't spoil for people who haven't watched it yet. But it's quite an elegant solution to the incredibly difficult question of how do you possibly cover that? And, you know, people will have very different opinions on whether it should have been done at all. I mean, you can only imagine for members of the family, this is something they probably won't want to watch.
As I sat watching it, I thought, imagine if you were William.
It feels
Harry
incredibly intrusive.
It does
from
feel
that
voyeuristic,
point of view.
Doesn't it?
It does. It does, absolutely. And like you said, I think actually that this is where we can, whether you like the royals or not, whether you want the story told or not, it's great television. It's high production value. It's very well done because, like you so rightly said, and you put it very well, the way that they have depicted the crash is a very elegant solution to a problem of how do you show this thing that we all know that happens without it being too voyeuristic, without it being too gruesome, too morbid. It is done really well. And like I said, it's high production value. It's great television. There's some great performances by Elizabeth Debicki and Dominic West. I think, yeah.
Dominic West's Prince Charles is portrayed very sympathetically.
I think that's important, actually, because a lot of people forget that they were on pretty good terms, you know. There was still... The War of the Whales is playing out in the press, but I think they'd reached a sort of more amicable setup by the time that she died, sadly.
That is all we've got time for this week. I know we could keep on talking about The Crown for a lot longer, but my thanks to Afia and Emily. If you want to join in with the debate, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think of the first four episodes of The Crown if you've seen it. And make sure you subscribe if you don't want to miss a single episode of The Royal Tea. We'll be back next week with all of the latest on the royal family. We hope you can join us. See you then.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.